most out of each training session doesn't mean moving the fastest, pushing the hardest, or lifting the heaviest. It means doing what's right for you in that moment, prioritizing proper form and technique over anything else. Today, we're giving out a free quick start program to help get you started along your path with healthy living. If you're interested, just go to our website, wilcoxwellnessfitness.com/quickstart to download your free guide. I hope you love it.
Back on Downtown, 13 minutes after 4 o'clock. If you're of a certain age, you might remember that is the theme song from a terrific late 1960s television series about a inner city high school called Room 222, produced by James L. Brooks and Alan Burns. And in part two of our conversation with television writer Treva Silverman, she talks about getting together with her old friend Jim Brooks and Alan Burns to write for that show and what it would ultimately lead to. After the Monkees went off the air, you hear from your old friend that you had met earlier, Jim Brooks, now working with Alan Burns, and they invited you to write for a wonderful show that I'm surprised people don't talk about it more often because it was so good and so ahead of its time, Room 222.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, I had met Jim at one point. At one point, I was supporting myself at night singing and playing the piano and in New York. And Jim and I met at one of these places and instantly started talking about Salinger and Fitzgerald and... We became, and we both wanted to write comedy, and we became friends from that and kept in touch. And so Jim, very early on, created this show, Room 222, that you were saying. And I'm surprised also because it was quite ahead of its time. It was the story of a high school, and the two stars, the main star of it was an African-American guy and his relationship to the school and to his African-American girlfriend. And it was a comedy drama, which was unusual for them because it was either, is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Which is, but this was a comedy drama, and from that, Jim had been friendly with Alan, and Jim invited Alan to come in and to produce it. Jim was then off doing Jim wanted Alan to be another person heading the group. And working with Jim, it was, again, here I am working with somebody that I know for years. So it was very easy in one way it was easy in that he knew the kinds of things that I would be attracted to. So he would say, hey, we have an idea. How about if such and such happened and then such and such happened? And then if he would be with another writer, he would play to their, he would give a suggestion to their strengths. Maybe their strengths would be more an action kind of a thing or whatever. But he was and is very good at combining what you do well with what they would like done. And that, boy, I'm segueing into Mary right now.
Perfect.
Yes. That's one of the things that made writing for the show, I'm not going to say easier, but more simpatico or simpatica, I don't know, again, Jim and Alan, by this time I knew Alan very well, by the time of Mary, that they called me. When they got the go-ahead from CBS, Jim told me I was the first person they called, and that was, I felt so respected. And you always do better when you feel respected. And so he and Alan had some ideas and which one would I like. And that's how we started. I hate that I said that he called me first. That's so narcissistic.
if it's the truth. Now, obviously, you're drawn to the idea of working with Jim and Alan, but how much of a pull also was the idea that you were writing about real people? These were not caricatures.
The pull was my agent called, and after I had written about three of them, and they weren't on the air yet. And my agent said, listen, I really want you, the other studios and networks to know your stuff. So you've written three Mary Tyler Moores. How about if you write something Warner Brothers is interested and ABC is interested? And I said, no, this is exactly what I want to write. It was so what I'd always wanted to do. I'd always wanted to write about real feelings and what was under the feelings, and real people, not people who go set up, yes, punchline, set up, punchline. even though, my God, Veep is so brilliant, and people do go set up, punchline. But I love that. I love to watch it. But I'm better if I'm not writing that. If I'm writing, I mean, my best foot forward, stupid phrase. But my best whatever is when I'm writing stuff that comes out of character humor. Oh, this sounds like I'm putting Veep down, which I'm... No, it doesn't sound like that. It was such an opportunity. Everybody, including Jim and Al, everybody who wrote for that show got better for writing it, because we saw the example... Oh, I never thought of this before. We saw the examples around us. Like, for instance, when I was story editor, and I would get the scripts first. I remember reading Ed Weinberger, who wrote one of the episodes that was concerning Cloris Leachman, that her husband was in love with Betty White.
Right.
And I think sitting there on the stairs reading it, I think I got better because I, without doing anything, which is a tough act, because I saw the next rung on the ladder of excellence, and I knew it could be done. And I think that Ed got better watching Alan's stuff, Jim and Alan's stuff. Jim and Alan got better doing a rewrite of somebody else. I think all of us just improved. It was like an education. At the best, most exclusive school.
We're talking with Treva Silverman here on Downtown. The first episode you wrote was the second episode in the series, Today, yeah. I'm a Ma'am. And I feel like even in that, it had only been one episode previously, but that was the beginning of Rhoda's character becoming more well-rounded, not just, well, that funny sidekick from the 30s movies, but somebody who also had beauty, who had intelligence, and who had a place right at the table alongside Mary as an equal.
What a wonderful observation. That is so insightful. Yes, there wasn't the ugly and or fat or whatever undesirable sidekick. Valerie, my darling, Valerie. I felt when I was writing, Jim and Alan had written two scripts. They wrote the pilot script, and then they wrote the script where Rhoda's, we meet Rhoda's parents. And those were the those were the two scripts that I had to go by because it wasn't, we weren't filmed yet. We had many, many months until we filmed. And I don't know if I did it consciously. I don't know. But if you're a decent writer, one of your obligations is to follow, is to grasp what the character is that was created by the creators. This sounds like the Constitution, created by the creators, unalienable rights. and I followed them on. I knew the character of Lou. I knew the character of Mary, but for some reason, I must have unconsciously felt that Rhoda was too harsh and softened her and made her more that word self-deprecating than competitive. Because in the pilot she was competitive, and who's going to like somebody who competes with our darling Mary? Even though the pilot was so brilliant, and they pulled that off. But I do remember Alan remarking when I finished my first script, remarking that was the way that narcissism creeps into that they wanted to keep Rhoda the way that I had imagined her. And it was magic writing for those people. They were not just arbitrarily. Well, I shouldn't say that because no creative producers and people who create something arbitrarily cast somebody. But I think that someplace when they were casting people, they also intuitively, I guess, knew who was going to be a team player and not, I need more lines. We never, ever had any of the cast members ever saying, I need more lines.
Well, and there's a great story about that as well with, and we'll talk about George Engel in a little bit, but when she had rehearsed this lengthy dance number, and when it came time to do the show and the run-through, everything was running long, and the first thought was to cut Georgette's dance number, but apparently both Ed Asner and Gavin McLeod said, no, she's worked too hard on this, cut some of our lines.
Yeah, oh, yes, oh, yeah.
Was it your idea, as I understand it, to have Lou's wife leave him?
Yeah.
As Ed explained to us the other day when we talked with him, I was shocked when I read it. We just met her, and then they shit-can her.
see, you can't confuse Ed and Lou. I mean, you can often confuse Ed Asner and Lou, because accepting the expletive, that's exactly what Lou would say. Jim and Alan called me in and said, We want to write something for Asner. What would you like to write? And that was kind of different because very often, as I mentioned before, very often they would say, "Oh, we have a great idea." Like they had said, Valerie has lost 20 pounds over the hiatus, and we want you to write a show talking about her losing weight. I mean, they would bring me an idea. But here they said, what would you like to write? And I said, I would like to see Lou Grant in pain. We never go that far under his blustering, but with a heart of gold thing. And that's fine, but we've never really seen him not being able to put on a front. And I would like to do that. So we came up with, this was exactly during, we came up with parentheses. This was exactly during when the women's movement was very much happening. And so we came up with that Lou's wife wants to see what her life is without him, and that they should separate. And boy, did we see Lou in pain. It was one of those times when other writers and maybe actors and directors will empathize with this, where you're learning as you're doing it. As I was writing it, I started learning to myself, what would it be like for him to hear this? Why is she leaving him? We all know that if you're that close to somebody like Lou, you know that on the outside he's thus and so, but inside he's a pussycat, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, she's not thinking about that she's leaving specifically Lou. It's not about him. It's about what she wants for herself, regardless of who she would have been married to, because he was old, old world. Is that,
old school?
Yes, old school. Thank you. Oh, God, why don't you come here? And every time I write something, just if I write the wrong word, you'll put in the right word.
I'll do that for a couple of gummies, absolutely.
With that, you'd get 10 gummies.
Fantastic.
And I started thinking about her and about what is happening to all the women in the United States. And, of course, it was happening in other Western civilization. My God. My God, I'm waving all these flags. But it was happening around the world that women were wanting to be fill in the blank here of what the women's movement was about. And it's one of the shows that I'm proudest of having written, and Ed was just so wonderful in it, regardless of what he was yelling to you. That's hilarious.
So they ask you to come up with a friend of Rhoda's for an episode. You had seen, I think it was the Milos Forman film that Georgia Engel was in, and so you wrote the part of Georgette specifically with her in mind.
Yes. What had happened was they said, you know, we know Rhoda as living in Mary's apartment house, and we talk about her being a window dresser, but we don't know anything about her life as a window dresser. So let's give her a friend. And so I started thinking, oh, let's see, what kind of friend? Well, the friend can't be ironic, because that's not a good team, because Rhoda does ironic stuff. And the friend can't be absolutely stunningly gorgeous, because that's Mary. So then I thought, well, what would go well with Rhoda's personality as a team? And I thought, ditzy. Because Rhoda's many things, but she's not ditzy. And then instantly, you just love when these things come to you. I remembered the Milos Forman film, and I thought that the actress's name was Georgette. Of course, it was Georgia. When I wrote the part, and then I brought the script in, and Alan read it, and he said, who do you have in mind? Do you have anybody? And I told him. And he had seen the film. And he said, that's a very good idea. Let me call her agent. And her agent said, well, it's a very small part. And usually, ordinarily, I would say no, because it's really too small for Georgia. But she doesn't have TV film for her. So we'll let her do this. And she was absolutely wonderful. And the night of the filming, and over the week, during the week of rehearsals, she was so ditzy and wonderful and sweet that her role kept getting bigger and bigger, because you want more and more of her. And the night of the filming, this is what a family we all were.
Is this the Alan Burns story?
Yes. the Alan Burns story, Alan said, Jim and I have decided we want her to be a regular, what they call a semi-regular. And we think you should tell her because you created the part.
Wow.
To tell somebody, of course the producers would want that privilege, but that's how they were, and that's why the show was so good, because of things like that. And it was just one of the most wonderful occasions in my work life to be able to tell this little doll, this little darling, Georgia, about that, and to see her face light up, and to know that I was making her happy because of her talent. It was everything you want it to be, all rolled up into. I was going to say, make a joke and say all rolled up into two, but no, it was all rolled up into one. That sweet, happy girl.
And she became the perfect foil for Ted, and made that Ted Baxter character much more human.
Yeah. The idea was that it takes a long time for regular people in real life to meet somebody like a Ted Baxter and to like him in the least bit, because he's just so full of himself. But the theory was that Georgette is so pure that she could see through the facade and know that there was a real guy under there. And they turned out to be this absolutely wonderful couple. Who could have guessed in year one when you meet Ted? Who would have guessed that they wanted to have a child? And who would have guessed that he would be so dear and so loving? And yeah, it was one of those things that just grows, and it was again the perfect thing at the perfect time.
I want to talk about one of my absolute favorite episodes of the series, Road to the Beautiful, which is such a wonderful episode, and it has to be, I'm sure, a very personal episode for you.
Oh yes, it was. It was a very personal episode. Yeah, I was saying about that that Jim and Alan said that Valerie had lost 20 pounds, and so we want to address that. And so it was personal to me because it was personal to me because I found a diary that I wrote when I was in seventh grade, and I was dieting from seventh grade. In seventh grade, I wrote down what I had eaten. Today, I had grapefruit and black coffee and a hard-boiled egg. I mean, I had been dieting since I had been 10, seventh grade. And, yeah, it was very personal because I knew what happens. I knew what happens when you've lost weight, but the sort of not so sure. Rhoda says, what I'm trying to say, Rhoda said better than me, because she said in the thing, oh God, now I've set this thing up and I can't remember the exact line. Great. That's what makes a writer need a gummy. oh, that's right. Rhoda says she was depressed about something. What? Well, I can never again say, gee, all I have to do is lose 20 pounds and I'll be great looking. I had known that you can lose weight and then be nervous that you're going to gain weight. And yeah, it was very personal to me. When I actually write this minute, for a long time, a long time ago, I lost a bunch of weight, and I'm now at my exact right weight. So I could never write that again. But then after I wrote the episode and it was on the air, I was at a Weight Watchers meeting, and we start off by saying why we decided to come. And one of the women said that she had seen a Mary Tyler Moore episode, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I wrote that. I wrote that episode. So it was, yeah, it was very personal. Valerie and I, we shared so much over the years, and this was very, very personal to both of us. There was a thing where there's something at the end. Well, no, I don't want to go through the whole episode, but it was my getting to deal with emotional conflicts in something as grave as huge as losing 20 pounds can be to a young woman. And it was like when I wrote the Luanidi story. It was one of those situations where I was so looking inward. And when I wrote the last scene, I wrote it crying. It was just coming to me as I was writing. And I never cried when I was writing a monkey's, but I was crying there. That and the Luanidi story, I guess, were two of a kind in that it was about strictly, totally about emotions.
You also, speaking of emotions, wrote a wonderful episode, Better Late Than Never, that gave Mary a chance to show an incredibly broad range of emotion.
Yes, yeah. This was, I don't know if other shows do this or did this, but Jim and Alan, the gurus of this section, they would always know in advance what episodes they wanted to submit for the cast member to get an Emmy. So they said they wanted this to be Mary's Emmy episode to be submitted. It's like saying to your wife or your husband, okay, we're going to make love, but I want to tell you when the child arrives, I don't want the child to go to Yale. I mean, it's like you're already projecting. Or I only want him to go to Princeton, or him or her. So we knew that she had, we knew that we wanted it to be something where she gets fired, and we didn't quite know how to go about it. And then came up with the idea of that she's fooling around with the obituaries. And when I was writing it, Rhoda was helping Mary, and they were working into the night, and they were getting sleepy and crazy. And in my own mind, I was thinking, well, of course they're taking a couple of joints, because how else are they going to stay up and still be creative and everything? But of course, you're not supposed to write Mary Tyler Moore, America's Sweetheart, is smoking a joint. So I just had them get like silly and dizzy and saying dopey things. And so they wrote the dopey thing. Mary wrote the dopey thing and then got fired. That was a lot of fun to write.
You got so much acclaim, awards, Emmy awards. I think the only Super Emmy ever awarded, and then you walked away and headed off to Europe. Why was that so important for you to do at that time in your, not just your career, but in your life?
Let's see. I had decided. Boy, this real quick answer here, huh? ever since I was five and was told that I was this musical genius thing, I had been giving out, I had been producing stuff, songs or music or lyrics or sketches or episodes, I thought I was in danger of that I'm going to be somebody who, that I wear myself out, I wear out my creativity, and then I just don't keep progressing. I realized that every time that I went to Europe, I would go for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Every time I went to Europe, I something was added on to me or digested by me, or I felt that I came back changed in some way, and I thought, now is a great time for me to go and stay there for a year and see who do I become. Now, that sounds so, I don't know, new age or something. Who does she become? And everybody writes in and sends a vote. Who does she become? But that really was my feeling, cliche or not. And I think that the course of what was happening with me being on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, I knew that I was growing, but I felt pretty comfortable about that. I'm gonna go to Europe and see other different ways of life and see how other people feel. I only knew how people who were my friends felt, or how I just felt I wanted to broaden myself. This has nothing to do with the episode where Rhoda loses weight. So I thought I wanted to broaden myself. When I came back, I felt I was quite a different situation, and I started to write theater and movies. By that time, Mary Tyler Moore was off the air.
And you had turned down the opportunity to write for Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah, yeah. Lorne Michaels was about to have the very first Saturday Night Live. I mean, he was creating it, and when he asked me, not only was I living in Europe, but I felt that. I mean, it sounded great, and and Lorne was, I adored him. But I felt that really isn't what I do best, that I could name, let's say, two or three other writers who could do sketch stuff better than I could, and that really I wanted to stick to what I did best, because I didn't want to be almost good. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. But I didn't want to feel that this wasn't what I was really good at, and that I wanted to continue what I was really good at, which is character stuff. By the way, later on, when Saturday Night Live went on, and there were and still are, a lot of character things, some gorgeous ones. I remember Marilyn Miller wrote some lovely, lovely Saturday Night Live stuff, character stuff. But at that time, and I don't regret it at all, at that time I felt that I wanted to do what I really feel is my place, is character stuff and insights. Oh.
And
who writes insights?
Treva, what did it mean to you to have that opportunity to work with the great Michael Bennett?
It was the best time of my life. It was the best time in every single way. I was engaged to Ed Kleban, and Ed is a gorgeous, gorgeous writer who wrote the lyrics to A Chorus Line. And he told me that Michael was looking for his next writing project, and could he send to Michael a screenplay that I had written? So I said, sure. And Michael sent for me, and we were together. He said he just wants to see how we get along, and we got along as if it was meant to be. And after a few days of our meeting and talking, he said, okay, I want you to move to New York. I want you to write my next project. So to make an impossibly long story as short as I can, I moved to New York, and I felt and feel that working with Michael was the best thing I had ever experienced ever in my life. He's known worldwide as this brilliant choreographer and director, but he was also so verbal and so discerning. I could hand him 3 pages, and he would say, "Oh, this line. Let's expand this line, because then we know that she." I remember being with a friend of mine while I was writing Scandal. The name was Scandal, and we were walking around the village. Oh, I had moved to New York, of course, and we're walking around the village, and he said, "You know what I really want? I really want so and so." He was talking about what, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I don't want anything except what I'm doing." I mean, it was one of those things where the orchestra makes a sting going, "Dung!" And then, you know, "I've never been so happy in my life," you know. But I had never been so happy and so fulfilled and so satisfied. And I was writing and did write what I consider the best thing that I've ever written. I was just writing somebody just today about this. We were a few months to go before opening on Broadway, and I wrote this to my friend. We even had the T-shirts. They had even made the T-shirts saying "A Scandal is coming to town." And Michael contracted HIV, which then was a death sentence. And he did not want anybody to know. So what he did was he overnight dropped Scandal and told everybody that they can take other jobs, and did not want anybody to know. And then when it became AIDS next year, Michael died. And he was very cruel. He was very cruel to me. After Stephen Sondheim, I was at a small dinner party while I was writing Scandal, and George Firth, who had written with Stephen Sondheim and had been directed by Michael, and Stephen, of course, knew Michael and had worked with him. And Sondheim, no, I'm not, you know what? I'm not going to go into it. I'll just simply say that Sondheim was aware that Michael could be very moody, and I was not aware of that at that point. I was on a creative honeymoon with the genius of Michael, and Michael got moody and fired all his women associates, his assistants, and turned on me. He was in a "I hate women" mode, and it was very cruel. And then came the horrible HIV thing, and I think of him all the time. Cruelty aside, no. Better than that, cruelty included. He influenced me as much as anybody in my whole life creatively. Working with him was, I said to somebody, it's like the best sex you ever had, except without the sex.
Well, when you talk about influence, so many people look up to you, your pioneering work. How does it make you feel when you have women or anybody tell you that you're a hero, you're an inspiration to them?
I was going to say, I feel like looking over my shoulder and saying, who are they talking to? But No, truly, I feel I was so unaware of that. I mean, I only became aware of it. They tell me that they look up to me, and they were young, or they were younger, and there was this woman who was writing television. But at the time, I wasn't aware at all of that happening. I was just aware of, is this next line going to be good, or, oh my God, we cast this wrong. I was just involved in the work. It wasn't until later on, Winnie Holtzman, who's now a dear friend, was one of the people who early on told me that she would be sitting with her dad, and they would be watching Mary Tyler Moore, and she would say, look, there's a woman writer, and she's Jewish, and I read that she's from New York, and she's a comedy writer. And, it wasn't until much. It makes me feel wonderful, I guess is the short answer. How does it make me feel? It makes me feel absolutely wonderful. The women's movement helped me, reading all those books and meeting. I was friends with Marlo Thomas, who introduced me to Gloria Steinem and Bella Abzug and the whole movement in and of itself. And for me to feel that in some way I was and am or was or am part of that is a great honor.
Well, it's a great honor for me to get to talk to you. You've been a hero of mine for so many years, and it's been absolutely delightful to have this chance to chat with you.
Afraid to say how many years, because you'll give away my age.
No, I was thinking more of that I would give away mine.
Oh, I see. Well, this has been lovely talking to you.
Well, thank you so much, Treva. We appreciate the time, and it's been delightful. I hope we can do it again sometime, and I hope those candies work out quite well for you.
You'll find out.
Right. Treva, thank you so much.
I should say, those questions are so insightful. Thank you for that.